It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Good to see you, Mike.
Good to see you all.
The old gobble hello. We obviously into the first week of turkey season, over the first week of turkey season now. It's all over.
All over? What? I hadn't even started yet.
It's just funny. Like, you get to this point, you're like, well, if you know, you didn't get them all killed. But no, it's been a little over a week here, a week and 4 days or something like that since the start of turkey season. So we'll talk some turkey. Also, Captain Wayne Miller joins us. He doesn't hunt turkeys, but he hunts bass, and we'll get the report from the Delta from him coming up in just a little bit. And
it's only been, Sean, hadn't been a week yet. Today's a week.
No, it's Tuesday was a week.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Tuesday was a week. Yeah, so it doesn't start a week.
I think it opened on a Saturday.
Yeah,
I'm wrong.
So it's been a week and change.
Yep.
That's what turkey season does to you. Mike, what's your report? What have you done?
Well, I've only hunted a day and a half.
Okay.
And I have not done any good at all. I mean, I've heard plenty of turkeys gobble, but they were with hens and they just wouldn't come.
Okay.
So, I mean, I sat all day the opening day. Except for about an hour. I came out, got a little something to eat, mm-hmm. something to drink. I went right back in the woods, stayed to dark, and heard turkeys gobble in the morning. I heard one about 4 o'clock that afternoon. He gobbled like 5-6 times in a row, and I said, well, afternoon, mm-hmm. he's gobbling.
He's coming.
I'm going to get him. Never heard another word, never gobbled again, never saw him, nothing. So that's it. Next morning, I heard some more turkeys gobbling. It was a real strange morning for me. I mean, I heard probably 8 or 10 turkeys gobbling right at daylight. And when they flew down, every one of them shut up. Never heard another turkey. Now, they weren't all on my property. They were on other people's property.
But they all shut down at the same
time. There was two, might have been three, but at least two on me gobbling. And when they flew down, every turkey shut up. There was no birds chirping. There was, no crows crowing. It was just a strange morning. Sometimes you go and you never hear a turkey gobble.
That's
you
right.
know, period. When you know there's 10 or 12 or whatever around you, you don't hear nothing gobble. But they all flew down, and every one of them shut up.
It's because they partied too hard, Mike.
I guess they had a bad night or something.
It's my theory now, my working theory.
Yeah.
Talked about it as I'm working this, that when you have a real good gobbling day, and then you go the next day and don't hear them, it's because they partied too hard the day before. It's like kids get down to spring break Friday night.
I guess they just
raising
wore
hell,
out.
Doing all that. Saturday, they laid up at the condo eating pizza.
Yeah.
I was thinking about turkey call wise, something I wish I had on a hunt that we'll talk about here in a second, is the fight and purr that you do, and you use two push button
right,
now yelpers.
Right, that.
Because I had birds that were hung up, and I was trying to get them to break free. And that's something I've watched you use with great success. That,
yep.
you know, well, they'll answer a yelp. Of course, they'll answer a yelp, but they're with hens or whatever. They'll give you what I call courtesy gobble, but they're not coming sometimes.
Right.
And that's when you've turned to the aggression side of it.
I have, and I've had them come to me. And it works for me better the first part of season, mm-hmm. especially when it used to open up on the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's still
trying to figure out who's boss man. Yeah.
Trying to figure out dominancy.
Yeah.
I mean, that really worked for me. But once they figure out dominancy, and later on in the season, it hasn't worked for me as well. I'm not
but
telling
usually
you
by then, though, the later on in the season, the hen's gone to nest, it makes them a little easier just to yelp them in.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But I wish I had that. I wish I had those the other day.
Yeah. You think it'll work?
Oh, yeah. It'll work. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it'll work.
Well, I mean, you got everything else in your vest. Why don't you have that?
Okay. So, and by the way, you saw the new vest I got last time. So I'm fewer things in my vest. But now I'm thinking about having to
get a bigger vest.
To go back to one of my many other big vests because the new turkey call I'm going to use. And I checked this out. I called Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. I said, am I in violation if I have this locator call? And he thought about it. And he said, you're not. So if I'm putting Chuck on the spot here, so I'll explain here. But it's ordered. Hopefully it's coming in.
Okay.
So I think it's
Did you order two?
Okay, well, I want to tell you about this thing. You might be able to get it.
You better go to
at the store. So, so one of the more memorable, the hammerback, last sitting down hammerback hunt I had since last time we talked was one of those mornings where we're talking about the turkeys not gobbling. It, you know, had some here recently. Just, you know, we've got plenty of turkeys. They gobble, and then some days they don't gobble.
They don't. Yeah.
So I was went out and went to my normal listening spots. Didn't hear anything. And just slip an owl, you know, with owl, and then got other owls fired up and then turn it over to them, you know, because that's, I mean, that's the greatest thing when they start owling at each other and then right. You can just sit back and
you can just listen.
And they're going crazy, and you figure, hey, one's about to cut loose here. Nothing. Nothing. So I keep working my way down further and further, and I hear the end of a gobble. You know, you just hear it off in the distance. And I'm like, okay, I think I know where that is, and I heard another one. So I make a beeline about a quarter-mile walk to where I'm going. And as I get closer, I'm hearing gobbles. At the same time, I'm hearing there was a bunch of emergency responders coming down the road with sirens on.
Yeah.
Now, we've all heard turkeys gobble at all kind of stuff. Jake brakes, backing up for heavy machinery, doors slamming.
Trains, horns.
Right. Thunder, of course. I wasn't hunting them the other day, but last Sunday, I guess it was. Yeah, they were gobbling at the thunder, you know, during the rainstorm. Those are things that happen. It's nothing new. But when I tell you that these birds not just gobble. Now, nothing else is gobbling anywhere else.
Right.
Walked past tons of non-gobbling turkeys on that morning. But these two gobblers weren't just gobbling. They lost their ever-living minds.
It's amazing how that works.
As the sirens of these vehicles, and there were many responding to this, it was one after another. As soon as the sirens would go away, birds wouldn't gobble. The crows flying right over them, they're not gobbling. Next siren coming down the road, triple gobbling on top of each other. Like, I mean, incredible.
Right.
To sirens. So I looked, and I remember, you know, when my children were young, they had looks like a little megaphone, right? The kids could use like a little Mr. Megaphone, but it had choices on the back where you could play like dog barking or whatever, but one of them siren.
Yeah.
They're available on Amazon, all I'm saying. And it gives the woo, woo, woo siren sound.
Did you buy two?
No, but I can go back and amend the order.
Never mind. Just don't. But let me see how it works out for you.
You fit that in the vest. And I think, you slip out there, and when you've owled and you've crowed and nothing's happening, you fire up the siren. Because it was like something I never heard. I mean, and the other birds that were out of range of that siren, when I walked back, you know, those birds, none of them gobbled.
So you think these two, they could hear. Couldn't hear it?
Yeah, I think they were far enough away they couldn't hear, or it wasn't as close to them. These were down towards the edge of the property, closest to where the sirens were coming from.
Yeah.
And they were gobbling. And then right across the property line, somebody else was hunting, same thing. I texted them because I heard them shoot, and they said that birdie gobbled a couple times, maybe 10 times before that. But they said once the sirens came, I don't know how many. It was, like I said, it's not that I've never heard them gobble at a siren or a Jake break or all these things. I've just never heard them nonstop gobble to something like this. Just insane.
That's so amazing. Now, that's going to be real funny. Your neighbors are going to sit over there. Your neighbors are going to be over here. What in the world is
times
Sean
get tough,
doing over there?
Well, you know, they got all the, when you have a turkey vest got too much stuff in it, you've got your owl and your crow. You got two or three different owl calls for a different tone. You got a crow call. Then you have a woodpecker. People get all these different. It was peacocks back in the day. The peacock thing was going to be the
silent dog whistle.
I haven't ever used that.
Oh,
one.
Yeah.
I got to put that in my vest, too.
Yeah, silent dog whistle.
Okay. So all those things I've, been out there. I've not had the silent dog whistle or peacock, but I've heard them. But the woodpecker sure have. But the siren. And I said, this is not a natural sound. He said, it looks like as a locator, it's not against the law. So
I can see how that wouldn't be. That's not a call that you're trying to call one into.
What I can't wait for is for somebody to go with me.
Yeah.
And be easing down a road, and well, if owled or something, I'll say, hold on, be quiet.
You know how
you do this where you turn the other guy and say, you listen this way, I'm going to listen this way. And they're probably perked up their ears. The next thing I pull out, it's white and orange toy microphone thing with the siren sound and hit that baby.
So how loud is it?
I don't know. Well, we will see if it has the volume that it, you know, but it probably is as loud as those sirens were in the distance.
Next, you'll be toting one of those big boom boxes with you.
That's exactly what I thought.
Hey, yeah, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes to get them to gobble on those mornings. But, yeah, I was saying the hunt there, I wish I had the fighting bird because I got pretty close to those birds because they gobbled a million times and you could get right where you needed to be. They did what's rare for us. They pitched over and flew a good distance to get to an open area. And they got there, went back to gobbling. Then I think by then the sirens had stopped and they were kind of normal gobbling at that point. And just a scenario like, you know, we talked about on shows past how I love to have a corner, you know, so a turkey can't see that there's not a hen. So they come. I had a corner, but my leg of the corner was too long. Finally, yeah. One of those who can wait longest. And finally bird broke after about 35 minutes. And came looking, but he came and looked down a gas line that was there. And
didn't see anything.
He didn't see anything. And I've switched now. I'm shooting that 410 with TSS. I just didn't feel like I had the range on him. And
he looked. How far was he?
When I walked it off now, I didn't have a tape measure, but about 40 steps, you know. But I was looking at him. I was uphill, and not a big hill, but, you know, a taper there from where I was sitting. And I just thought.
I think the 410, 40 yards with TSS, well, I think you...
I've patterned it before at it, but I was just not sure. Was it 40 or 50?
Yeah, that's the problem. You don't know whether it's 40. Sometimes you think it's 40 and it's 60.
Yeah, so I was sitting there and I said, man, I just need him to come a little closer. And I thought the fighting part could have worked there, but he didn't. But the takeaway from this story... Woo, woo, woo! The newest, hottest locator call out there. Forget all the, throw everything else in your vest away and get you a siren.
Yeah.
All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. And, it's still a little, tell you what, so we finished up the last segment talking about the one I found, I showed it to you, Mike, online. It is let me see what brand. I'm not telling y'all which one you need to have as a locator call. This one, though, is on Amazon. Not saying if there's local places selling the Playroot Megaphone for Kids voice-changing device with siren sound.
I just don't know if that's going to be loud enough, Sean.
Well, I mean, I have to go to a real siren.
Yeah.
If not, just, you know, but I mean, if that's what the turkeys want
to... off of a police car.
Hey, listen, that's what the turkeys want to gobble to.
Yeah.
It's going to be the hottest
thing.
We're going
to get one somewhere, aren't we?
Welcome to the turkey race out there. into that mix, we bring our buddy Captain Wayne Miller in. He probably goes, gosh, how do I get in these conversations again? Hey, Captain Wayne. Yeah.
How you guys doing today?
I'm good.
Good. Yeah, what you missed is I had turkeys wouldn't gobble to anything the other day, and it's not unheard of that turkeys gobble to weird things, Jake brakes and car alarms and backing up heavy equipment. But I had birds come inside out to gobble to sirens in the distance. So, I mean, you're like a good turkey hunter. I'm just going to carry a siren with me to heck owling at them or crowing at them. I'm just going to fire the siren up. I'm just trying to think, do you have any problem with that?
No.
Good.
I'm glad you're on board. One thing for sure, if Wayne could find something that would help him catch a bass, and it didn't make any difference if it had a siren on it, he's going to get it to use it. Isn't that right, Wayne?
You're right about that, Mike.
No matter how loud it'd be.
If I can do to stack the deck in my favor, I will do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, too. While that's an odd thing to have the turkeys – gobble at, but I started thinking on the fishing side too when we were talking about it. I knew we'd talk to Captain Wayne. Like the weird things fish bite, you know, and I mean, I'm thinking about to the crazy things like I think we've all been on a bite, whether it be brim or hardtails or anything in between where they're biting just a hook.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I've been down at Venice, Louisiana catching redfish on a jig head, nothing on it.
Yeah.
Just a jig head.
Yeah.
And then to the other extreme where you just have some crazy lure that looks like nothing. I mean, I'm not saying watermelon chartreuse, Captain Wayne, but looks like nothing that they eat normally. Okay, a methylate trick worm. I love to. What in the heck does that look like? Why did the bass eat that?
I tell you what, I've caught quite a few fish this week on a trick worm. I've used the old school bus yellow, several different colors, and I have absolutely no idea other than the fact that, you know, the fish are up shallow, and you've got a lot of male fish, you know, that are protecting the beds, and I think just that color just makes them mad, man. That's all I can think of.
Because when they eat, you know, let alone the school bus yellow is one, and then that methylate looks like it came out of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, and the fish are eating on that. And he's like, "What the heck are they thinking?"
But that's hot pink mirror lure.
I mean,
who would have ever thought a hot pink mirror lure?
Listen, only took me probably, I don't know, being beaten by Bobby by like 23 fish in a row one day when we were wade fishing for me. Go, hey man, you got another one of them pink ones out here? Yeah, it's a special price.
What does that look like? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but the fish seem to like it. It's good
to hear. They're mad at it.
It's good to hear they're biting trick worms, so that's a fun way to fish, Captain Wayne.
Oh, yeah, it really is. I mean, what we're seeing now, you know, I was on the water this morning, and, you know, our water temperatures have gotten up in the 70s now and pretty stable. You know, we've got just tons of fish that have moved into that really shallow water. So, you know, we got fish on the beds. We've got, you know, a lot of fish that are staging, fixing to spawn. I think the 12th is our next full moon. So we're not far out from that. So, you know, it's just a great time to get out and fish, man. I'll tell you what, you know, I've been power fishing a lot too. I mean, catching a lot of fish on spinner baits and chatter baits, especially. But
no crankbaits? I was looking at Mike. No crankbaits? They're not eating crankbaits? I'm just trying to make this good for Mike.
He's fishing grass, probably.
Okay.
No, I really hadn't thrown a crankbait much. I mean, I've been targeting a lot of places where you've got quite a bit of grass.
See
that? So, if I'm on power fish, typically this time of year, I'll either throw a chatterbait or a spinnerbait. So,
explain to folks that haven't seen. I know it's a favorite and it's picked up. A lot of people fish them, but for some people, might not have been around some of the fishing on the causeway. Chatterbait. What is a chatterbait?
Yeah, really, a chatterbait, all it is just a jig. And I mean, most people understand. You know, they know what a jig is, a skirted jig, and you just attach. They have a blade that's attached to the front of it. Now, there's multiple colors and sizes, but what you've got, you know, it's a chatterbait is really a bladed jig. So it's got a blade in front of it that vibrates, and depending on the size and the manufacturer, some of them are a lot more, violent from the standpoint of how much vibration they put off. And, a couple of them that I really like are ones that you can kind of use a stop and go retrieve, and I describe it as they wander. In other words, when you stop it, they don't fall straight. When you either stroke it with your rod or with the reel by turning the reel, it doesn't pull straight. You know, it's moving constantly from side to side, and that's why I say it wanders. And, you know, it's something that a lot of people don't pick up on, but occasionally, even when you're buying the same type, say you're buying a Z-Man, you know, a 3/8 ounce, you know, green pumpkin chatterbait. Well, guess what? Not every one of them is going to be identical. There's going to be differences in those blades. There's going to be differences and the line ties on them. I mean, there's things that can make one much better than the other one. And, you know, when you feel one, you know, that's the great thing about a chatterbait, man. It's a bait that you really, you can feel it. I mean, you get tremendous response back from it. So, but when you get one that you really can feel it, a lot of times you'll notice that you catch a lot more fish on that particular one. And there's usually a reason for that, but you may not be able to discern it just looking at it versus another bait just like it. But that's always one you want to, you know, treasure and probably, if you're a tournament guy, save that one for tournaments.
Is there any way to tune it?
To seize, You know, there's little intricacies of chatterbaits, spinnerbaits, all of those baits. You know, they're not identical. Just because they look like they're exactly the same in the pack, a lot of times you'll have some that really perform so much better.
So is there any way to tune that bait with the blade?
You can, Mike. You can alter, you know, you can bend it a little bit. And but you know, and I do that some, but you know, it's you know, most of them now, you know, especially the really quality chatterbaits you buy, like the Z-Man, you know, they make one called a jackhammer, and it's like $18.
Jeez.
So you know, my expectation on it is that I don't have to do a whole lot of tuning on it when I pull it out of the pack.
Better not. It jackhammers your wallet.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, you know how it is, though, buddy. If it'll catch a fish, man, we don't pay any attention to
it. It don't matter, does it? It don't matter. We're gonna spend whatever it takes to catch it. You know, back in old days with the We Are's and the Rebel We Are's that we used to use. We used to have to adjust those all the time on crankbaits.
Oh, yeah.
And the Bagley baits, the older Bagley baits. We had to adjust them a lot to get them to run just right, because you just move it just a hair one side or the other, and it'd make a big difference on how it would wobble.
So
thank goodness we don't have to do that as much anymore, because the new baits, they're pretty much tuned.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, they do a good job on that. But even then, you know, I mean, there's still going to be some baits that outperform other ones. And, you know, so it's important to pay attention to things like that, too. I mean, you know, because there are days when it'll make a big difference. So, but I typically, on the chatterbaits, I don't have to do much tuning on them. Now on spinnerbaits, and, you know, every time you catch one of those Grinnell, you know, he'll typically give you your spinnerbait back, and you, a lot of times, you don't even recognize it as a spinnerbait. So,
that's true. It's a lot straighter than it was.
Yeah. In fact, I caught some this morning on a spinnerbait. And man, it was old, a man's classic. I know you've thrown them before, Mike.
Yep.
You and Sean have, but... man, I had that thing tuned. It was running so good, and I had about a 4-pound Grinnell. Absolutely mangled it beyond recognition. So, needless to say, I wasn't happy with him, and I'm not going to tell you what I did to him. So.
Yeah. Well, you know,
you won't catch him again.
He was just tuning it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tuned him too.
Yeah. Just joined us, talking to Captain Wayne Miller. Before we go to the break, and we'll come back and talk about it more. But you talking about that full moon coming. Are you a pre-full moon, at full moon, after? Like, if you had a choice, does it make a difference for bass fishing?
You know, right now it doesn't, Sean, primarily because, you know, you've got fish in all different phases. I mean, we're catching fish that have come off beds already. So, you know, it really doesn't matter to me. You know, the most important thing is that we've got decent water.
Okay, we're going to hold on to that.
That's the only thing that's a real detriment here, is if we have flooded conditions.
Okay, stand by. We're going to come right back. More of our conversation with Captain Wayne Miller right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you here. And our buddy, Captain Wayne Miller. Always good to talk to him about the lures that the Grinnells have been, Grinnell torn up on them. But listen, before we went to the break there, Captain Wayne, we were talking about the full moon. And, you know, it's like, because on the speckled trout side, I sure like to fish going into the full moon
right, a
lot more than after. But you said that they're not all spawned at the same time, so your concern's more with water clarity, right, or water conditions than it is with the moon.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, once we get into this time of year and that water temperature gets 70 and above, Man, we've just got so many fish in all these, you know, in the bays and the creeks. You know, we're typically not targeting the rivers, but, you know, there's so many fish up in that shallow water. It really doesn't matter to me because, I mean, I just really catch fish extremely good this time of year.
Okay. We want to be like you. So let's do a little breakdown here of the next couple of months. You got different waves of fish coming up to spawn. I mean, that's a lot of stuff going on. Like, so let's start on the south end, you know, where I kind of cut my teeth growing up, down along the causeway. If you have to kind of pick out a pattern, or, I mean, are you drifting? Or, you know, I'm thinking about my old days of drifting, throwing sallies, but I mean, is that still working? Or are you picking out wood? Or are you going to the creeks? What are you doing on the south end right now?
Yeah, you know, right now, you know, the drift with spinner baits and stuff when you've got water up over the grass is working great. And at the same time, you know, as that water temperature warms down on the lower end, one thing that I typically see, a lot of times you'll catch numbers with the like spinner baits and chatter baits, but as more fish lock on those beds, I find dragging a soft plastic, a lizard or whatever, a creature bait, you know, I have typically better luck catching the females. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind there. But, yeah, the bays are wide open, and they will be for, you know, quite a bit of time now. But, you know, all the big creeks, you know, the fish have pulled up, and, you know, I mean, everywhere I've gone here over the last week, I mean, everybody I'm talking to, they're catching fish, you know, and a lot of those are males, you know, obviously, you know, and they're really active. And, but, you know, this time of year, as much as I enjoy the power fishing, you know me, Sean, mm-hmm. I will slow down with that lizard, man, because it's just it's a dynamite, you know, big fish bait.
But tell me when, and I know you do, but folks listen, like, when do you go, okay, I've been power fishing, I'm catching these fish over grass, and now I'm going to switch and slow down. When is that? Do you see something? Do you go, I think there's beds in here? I mean, when do you make that change?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're throwing a spinnerbait or a chatterbait and you're on a grass stretch, say, and you catch three or four, you know, smaller fish, and they're all peeing, I mean, it's mm-hmm. obviously you're catching males that are, you know, around beds. You know, you may want to turn around and take that same stretch and just pick it apart with plastic.
Okay.
And a lot of times what you'll find is if you slow down, you know, especially if you're dragging something that's weighted, because it's going to the bottom. I mean, most of this water we're fishing is relatively shallow. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. anywhere from, you know, 1 foot to 3 foot deep. So, you know, even if you're using just a quarter ounce tungsten weight, you're pretty much immediately getting to the bottom. Well, that's where those bed fish are. You know, I mean, they're not up in that water column chasing stuff around. So, you know, to me, it's just a higher percentage, you know, play to try to drag plastic through there to access the bigger fish.
That's a good tip, because it's not like, hey, I'm going another place. You're letting what you're catching tell you that I need to go back through there and pick it apart.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's obvious that you're in an area, and a lot of times, you know, on our fishery, we have places that we can see the beds. You know, they're visual. We can see them, but a lot of times our water doesn't allow us to do that. So, you really have to let those fish tell you something when you catch them. You know, you have to pay attention to that, because, like I say, you know, if you're down in Florida, you know, you can ease around and you know, either trolling motor or drift or pole around and just spot beds. And but a lot of times we don't have that luxury here.
You know, I came across the causeway the other day after all that big, bad, heavy rain, and everything was so muddy over there. Are the bays, like Chocolata and Grand Bay and all the other bays, are they somewhat clear with the grass, or is it muddy too?
Yeah, they are. It's surprising. I mean, I went to an area today when I first ran in there, man. It was just like chocolate milk, and I ran for about a minute, you know, running 30, 40 miles an hour, and you know, the water changed color immediately, and you know, and I sat down, and man, I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, I had the grass there to filter it, and so you know, I immediately started catching fish. In fact, that's where I caught those fish on that school bus yellow trick worm.
Yeah,
so, you know, but you know, you just have to, you know, unfortunately, this is the time of year. You know, not only with the river stages, but with the tide, a lot of times the only way you'll know is just to run up in something and look at it. You know, now that involves burning more gas and all that, but a lot of times you can turn off the main river and go up in a creek. Well, the first, you know, quarter mile may look horrible. You're like, man, this looks bad.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I want to run up in there. Well, you get halfway up in there, and all of a sudden it cleans up, and then, you know, the top end of it may be absolutely gorgeous. So, you know, and you just have to go check it.
So with the river conditions like they are right now, and I'm sure with all the rains that we had, we're going to have some higher water coming. So
right now, surprisingly, the projections aren't too bad at all. I mean, they're not showing any flooded conditions. So, you know, I think our water's going to hold up pretty good, Mike.
Well, that's amazing to me with all the rains that we've had. I know a lot of it's been local rain.
Yeah, it's been south. I mean, like I told you like Sunday,
but,
it was raining down
thing
here.
You always have to keep in mind when you have that, even the heavy local rain, is what are the rivers doing when that happened? And we were in a hard fall when we got that big rain.
Yeah.
So, you know, had we been on a rise, or had it been, you know, like at 6-7 feet and steady, then all of a sudden, you know, it would be quite a bit different as far as what we would see over the next week. But the fact that we were in a hard fall really helped that a lot, and it kept it from blowing right back up.
Now, so with that being said, I started you off on the south end, and just a couple minutes here for the break, but Middle Delta, you still good to go there, you think, with current conditions?
Yeah, I'm spending most of my time now on the Middle Delta. And, you know, one reason I do that is this time of year, even though I love fishing down along the causeway, Sean, I mean, you guys know this,
mm-hmm.
you know, as much as anybody does, the fact that, you know, the wind can really be a detriment down there.
Sure.
So, you know, on these real windy days, man, that's what I love about this Delta, is there's so many places in that Middle Delta, some phenomenal lakes and creeks that you can run in and basically just eliminate the wind being a problem.
And that the conditions are still good enough in there and you find clear water, that makes it, you know, worth going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you really have to take all that into consideration, because even though those bays are loaded right now, man, on these days where we pick up, you know, when they start talking about a 15 to 17 mile an hour south wind, which all of us know means a 25 mile an hour.
That's right. Wind,
you know, you don't want to be in the middle of, you know, Chocolata trying to fish.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I put a lot of effort in, you know, a lot of time in the Middle Delta. And it pays off tremendously, because it's a great quality of fish, and there's so many areas when you get up in the middle that you can get away from the weather.
So what about the grass situation up there? I know, like, Reynolds and Briar Lake used to have tons of grass in it. Is it still a lot of grass, or?
Yeah, the grass has come back really strong. Now, it's not anything like it used to be, Mike. I mean, you know, McReynolds is – you know, we got a lot of grass there, and it's great, man. I mean, I love it. But, you know, I sure won't pretend that it's back, you know, the way it used to be. But, But, you know, all of those, you know, the bigger, you know, bigger lakes and creeks, places like Briar, I mean, they have just tremendous amount of grass in them. And there's some lakes that really surprise you. I mean, you'd be amazed. Right now, you can go in Dead Lake. There's a lot of grass in Dead Lake now.
Huh. Yeah, I don't remember grass even being in Dead Lake. So that's a big change.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, you don't necessarily have to have grass right now to catch fish, but, you know, a lot of these areas that I'm targeting do have grass, and man, it's, you know, I spend the majority of my time in the middle, and, you know, but I'll start moving up north, you know, more as we transition back into the, you know, the main rivers as we move.
Hey, we're going to run to the break and come right back. More with Captain Wayne Miller right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. And talking springtime. It's spawn time. Pick your month at spawn time with Captain Wayne Miller. You can go, you can catch fish that are pre-spawn, spawn, post-spawn. You can catch them in the lower delta, middle delta. And Captain Wayne, when we last left, you're talking about even going to the upper delta.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, really, you know, the deciding factor on that upper delta is always going to be those river stages. And, you know, I love to go up and fish around Mount Vernon, a lot of the big lakes that are up there. I mean, you know, and I know y'all have fished them over the years, but, you know, you really need those rivers down to fish those places like Shepherd's, you know, Cedar Creek. I love all that up there, but. You know, I don't go up there if the mobile's at, you know, 8-9 feet.
Right.
I
mean, no.
But you know, the phenomenal thing about the delta itself is just the sheer, size of the delta and the fact that we've got so many big lakes to fish. I mean, you take a lake like Mifflin. You know, Mifflin, even on a weekend when it's busy, you know, it can absorb 20, 30 boats. And this time of year, I mean, everybody's in there catching fish.
Yeah.
You know.
The only thing that irritates you there is the boats going by you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, one thing about that, Mike, I'm not going to downplay the significance of traffic because it does seem to impact the fish, obviously. I mean, everybody understands that. But to a large degree, I think a lot of times we let that bother us more than it actually bothers the fish.
Yeah, probably have to fish a little more off the bank than you would up on the bank because right up on the bank you'll have the waves hitting and crashing and it's going to be a little dingier water up there. You just have to move off the bank a little bit three foot, four foot of water.
Yeah, it's a scenario where, you know, a lot of times you can let something rattle you, and, if you just calm down and keep on fishing and make adjustments, just like you're talking about, sometimes it'll just move those fish out just a little deeper. But, a lot of times I've noticed that, you know, early in the morning when everybody runs into a lake, within an hour, you know, there'll be quite a few of them that leave.
Right.
And then an hour later, it seems like the fish will really trigger and turn on. I think it's because, you know, things calm back down.
Yeah.
So, patience is, you know, it's definitely a virtue fishing at times.
That's like a theme of this show, isn't it? I mean, for turkey hunting, for deer hunting, for bass fishing?
Hey, I got to ask that question. Are you hearing any turkeys gobble up in the Delta?
I do hear some turkeys gobble. I have people asking me that all the time. I constantly get asked where the ducks are, where the turkeys are, where the hogs are.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's not many folks that spend the number of days in that delta as you. So, yeah, we're trying to get recon, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, so, yeah, we'll finish up the show here. I'll have you drop me some pins on where there's a gobbling turkey. I got to ask you, too, before we get past this, the other fish. And, you know, I mean, I love bass fishing, but I do like to know, are you seeing anybody catch any perch?
You know, there really hadn't been many people out yet, Sean. I've really been surprised. You know, I thought I would have seen more this week, but you know, this past week. But I think we're fixing to see that explosion happen right now. So okay. You know, I anticipate it's really fixing to turn on. You know, that last high water that we had, you know, a week ago, you know, I think it kind of spooked a lot of people off. But now that the water's, you know, come back down and somewhat stable, I think we're going to see a lot more people come out.
Y'all going to be power fishing by those of us pulled up in a top with jigs and minnows trying to find those. Brim fishing, too, should be picking up.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's you can always tell when that brim fishing gets hot, man. I mean, these launches will load up. When you go by Dead Lake and you see there's about 40, you know, aluminum boats with 25s heading to Vizees.
Yes.
You know what's going on.
I might have been one of those at a point. You might have seen me. Yeah, that's a thing I love to do. But, crappie white perch fishing I do dearly love, too. But it's, you know, you talk about finicky. They can be pretty darn finicky.
But people really know how to fish for white perch nowadays. Seems like they catch them about every time they go.
This is a whole other show
about
the technology.
Right.
I mean, when I know that people in the middle of the summertime are fishing them, you know, like in Three Rivers or something, and they're like, yeah, the fish are between 15.4 feet and 16.1, and you use, I mean, they've got it dialed in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, done are the days of just sitting there in that aluminum boat with, you know, jigs and minnows.
In a treetop.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all that's changed nowadays. And they kill them now. I mean, used to, we'd go catch, you know, a mess of white perch, you know, 10, 20 or something, maybe.
Yeah.
But now, man, they'll fill the boats up. They'll release the small ones. They won't give me any of the small ones. Used to, we kept them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot better at them.
And it used to always amaze me with white perch fishing. I know we're getting off the subject a little bit, but it always amazed me that you could pull up to a treetop and there was just one spot in that treetop.
Yep.
I mean, if you went 6 inches to the right, 6 inches to the left, and the cricket's going down, or not the cricket, but the minnow's going down to the same spot, you would think. But that one spot in that treetop, you'd catch one every time you
stuck a minnow down. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You go just either side of it, wouldn't get a bite. I never could figure that out.
When you figure it out, let me know, because I could never figure it out in the past either.
Yeah.
And how you kept going in the same spot and catch another one.
Yeah.
You know, like they were lined up
over and over again, and nowhere else on that whole treetop would you catch one.
Wow. That's man, you're bringing back some bad memories and some good memories out there. Hey, Captain Wayne, before we wrap up, tell folks that we can trip booked right now in the spring, or, I mean, you're out there fishing all the time. If they want to go see the Delta, go catch some bass, how do they get in touch with you?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
All right. Good stuff, Captain Wayne. As always, we appreciate it. We'll let you get back at it, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right, guys.
All right. There he goes, Captain Wayne. And we're coming back next week. Hopefully,
we're going to have a Florida turkey report.
Have a Florida turkey story by then.
Yep. I hope you do. I hope you have one.
I'll have a story. Hopefully, it involves a bird.
Well, we hope it's a good story.
There we go.
There you go.
Y'all have a great one.